The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Josh Pick is the chief investment advisor with Aptus Wealth Management, a state-registered investment advisory firm. This program is sponsored by Aptus Wealth Management. Exposure to ideas and financial vehicles discussed should not be considered investment advice or recommendation to buy or sell financial vehicle. This information should not be considered tax or legal advice. Individuals should consult with professionals to see if any ideas expressed would fit their specific situation. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. Securities can fluctuate and when redeemed may be more or less than when originally invested. Welcome to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Show with Josh Pick. Every week, Josh will teach you ways to help manage risk and protect your retirement income in the new economy. The primary focus at Aptus Wealth is to provide flexible planning strategies that can efficiently achieve your long-term retirement goals.
Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Diane Brennan. Thanks so much for joining us. Josh, let's talk real estate. Average interest rate for a 30-year mortgage, it's dipped below 3%. Is this a good time to look at real estate as a vehicle to generate a secondary income in retirement?
Well, in general, obviously, Diane, low interest rates mean affordability typically goes up, or at least you're not paying nearly as much interest on your loan, which if you look back to the 1980s when people were taking loans out at 18 and 20%, I just saw that the 30-year, or at least the 15-year, is down almost to 2.5. I think the 30-year's dropped below 3. So it's a great time from an interest rate perspective. However, a couple important things to note. Just because you have a low interest rate does not mean that you're getting a good deal on the house. So I think you need to see where real estate markets are where you live, and is it a good time to buy? This is kind of the same argument as when you go buy a car, and people ask me oftentimes, should I take the 0% financing or should I take the rebate? Which one's better? Well, it depends. And if you think about the low interest rate or the interest rate on your loan on a car versus getting the rebate, from day one, you owe less on your car. And then over time, you have to kind of pay that rebate back potentially with interest. Well, the same thing can happen on a house. I'm getting a lower interest rate, but did I buy when the housing market was at a peak? And I'm certainly not an expert on real estate, and I'm certainly not an expert on every piece of real estate in the Columbus market, for example, in Upper Arlington versus Olentangy, but prices do seem to be pretty high. So I don't know. I don't know if it's a good time to buy real estate in general, but I will offer this, and that is that your primary residence, although I know it's been beaten into our head, it's one of the best investments you can make, and I agree with that to a certain degree. It is not necessarily an income generator. So we have to differentiate between our primary residence and a rental property. And rental properties can be a great source of income in retirement. They can also have some challenges. They're a great tax haven. They have huge tax advantages to investing in real estate. They can provide cash flow. However, do you want to rent? I think we've covered this in the past. Do you want to have a property manager versus doing some of the fixing up yourself? But a lot of times people confuse rental real estate or investment property with their primary residence. And they'll say, well, interest rates are really low. I'm going to buy this really expensive house because I can afford it because interest rates are low. And then they quickly realize what comes with that big house. Higher utility bills, property taxes go up, maintenance charges go up. They went from sometimes even one to two different, furnaces. Things can change dramatically. So don't view your primary residence as an income generator. You can view it as an asset for sure, and an appreciating one at that, but don't view it as an income source in retirement unless you plan on downsizing and using the proceeds of that property to use to fund a different type of income source. But that's not typically what people are doing. I think a lot of times, if we're being honest with ourselves, we use low interest rates and the concept of houses being assets as a justification to buy a bigger house. And that is not the right approach when we come at it from a retirement income perspective. I'm not poo-pooing the idea of investment real estate, but don't use the current interest rate environment as an excuse to buy a bigger house just because you want to buy a bigger house and then justify that with, it's a great investment and I can use it in retirement, and it's not the best way to accomplish that.
But when you're looking at rental properties, and let's say prices are higher than they have been. But if you look at your mortgage payment because of interest rates and how much residual income you can be making, does that seem like to be a good plan for residual income for people?
It absolutely can be. And my only hesitation there would be tread lightly and make sure you have really strong cash reserves. And we've gone through this enough times to understand why cash reserves are really important. Let me give you some examples over history. And I think, Diane, what you're saying is, if I buy a piece of property for, say, $200,000 and the mortgage on it's $1,000 a month or whatever, I'm using random numbers, but it's $1,000 a month, but I can generate $1,500 a month in rental income, well, then I'm $6,000 a year ahead. Take into account all the tax benefits with buying investment real estate, the fact that I'm leveraging, so I'm not putting as much money down. And that is the justification on why real estate is a great option. Totally agree. What can happen, though? So let's look at this. Now let's take that same scenario and insert a terrible economy. And people that were paying you $1,500 a month no longer are. So now you still have a $1,000 a month payment. The eviction process can take time, not to mention the fact that as part of that eviction, they may end up doing some damage to that property, which will cost some money to fix back up before you rent it again. If you are on what I would call on tilt, meaning that you are leveraged to the hilt, you have put all of your retirement income into this thing and you have very low emergency funds to be able to fix it, you could find yourself in quite a problem. On top of that, if you're relying upon your job to pay for that and your job is not one that's incredibly secure, that same environment, that downturn in the economy could have had an impact on your job as well. And now you've exacerbated the problem dramatically. So if you're going to play in the investment real estate market, which I think is a good option, Diane, something that I've done in my own life, make sure that you've set aside enough money to forecast for emergencies, downturns, lack of rent, loss of job. You have to treat this like a true business, not as just an investment that you would compare directly with something like investing in the stock market. It has to be run like a business. But if you can do all of those things, I think it's a great way to add retirement income and just a different source of income. We talk about that multiple legs on the stool. This is a great opportunity. It's a great source. Just tread lightly and handle it very cautiously.
If you would like a second opinion on your retirement portfolio, we invite you to take the Aptus Blueprint Challenge. It's a 15-minute phone call with Josh to get a second opinion. In return, he'll give you a $25 gift card to spend and support our local community. The number to call is 614-364-7300. 614-364-7300. And the website is aptuswealth.com. Josh, compared to generations past, are there more retirees who are now planning on working in their retirement?
I think there are, and I think studies show that, but it's not necessarily because more people have to. That's certainly the case. I saw a stat recently that said 40% of retirees plan on working to essentially add to their safety net and to compensate for what they perceive to be market volatility and longevity. So there is a significant percentage that are certainly planning on working longer to because they feel they need to. But there's also a very significant percentage, over half, that are working because they believe it adds to their mental well-being. So many people are viewing retirement differently. We talk a lot in my office, not about retirement, but about financial independence. And I think that you're seeing a shift in the way people kind of define their retirement. And by working, I don't mean they're necessarily working in the same job they were before, but they're doing something. And that something could be anything from working in a part-time job to volunteer work to consulting in their career that they did before. But what that does is it gives them purpose, gives them something to get up for every morning, also adds a little bit of income in many cases on the backside of, you know, that work and that purpose. But most people, over half of every single generation that you poll, says that they plan on doing some sort of work in their retirement, either because they have to or because they want to. And a lot of that percentage is because they want to. So don't view pure income or pure retirement pool as the end all be all. Many people aren't just pulling the ripcord and walking away. They're continuing on. They're continuing to work. And I think that trend will absolutely continue.
Do you find mostly because of the pandemic, people are like, wow, I should work more and plan on retiring at a later date?
Well, I think everybody has their own reasons, but I do know one thing, and that is Voya, which is a huge, you know, insurance / financial product company that's worldwide, has noticed that since the pandemic has hit, investments into retirement plans have gone up significantly. Nearly 70% of all participants in retirement plans at least managed by Voya, have increased their contribution since the pandemic. So if people have jobs, they're realizing that things could change and we better start saving more than maybe we were before because the future is unknown. Things like pandemics are now part of the retirement planning process, which certainly haven't been for the last 20 or 30 years, or at least they haven't had an impact on our ability to generate income. So we're certainly seeing people playing a little more cautiously and a little more aggressively in savings than they have in the past.
The Aptus Blueprint Challenge, it is a second opinion on your portfolio. Just schedule a 15-minute call with Josh and you'll receive a $25 gift card to support the local community. The number is 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300. And Josh, this works best with portfolios of $250,000 and up, correct?
Correct.
And that's because if it's a lesser amount, you can't really show them the value?
Well, I think, you know, to do true financial planning or to show the value of working with somebody like me, you have to show them that diversification makes a huge difference. And that's not just simply diversifying between stocks and bonds, but it's diversifying between money managers. It's diversifying between different asset classes beyond just stocks and bonds. And the only way you can do that in many cases with, you know, industry minimums, et cetera, is with a dollar amount of greater than that. So unfortunately, that's where the biggest value that I can bring comes.
All right, and Josh, let's talk about the Aptus Retirement Blueprint process. When someone comes into your office, what are the steps that you take them through to see if this is going to be a good relationship?
I think the only way that we can truly determine who you are, what you're trying to accomplish, and how to get there is through having a systematic process. The same approach that you would have in investing. We're very systematic here and rules-based, and that peels over into our planning process. Step one is, we want to find out everything that we can possibly know about you. We call it our discovery phase of the process. Who are you? What do you want to accomplish? What have you already acquired and what savings are you currently doing to achieve those goals? And then in step two, which is meeting two, we're going to analyze what you're already doing. Show you what your path looks like if you keep doing what you're doing. Maybe uncover some landmines that could occur along the way and what things could possibly happen to derail you. And then step three, we call the blueprint. And that's where we're going to solve all of those problems as best we possibly can. So we're going to mitigate risk as best we can inside of your portfolio and still allow you to achieve the objectives. We're going to make sure things like anything that could happen between now and retirement or between now and whatever your goal is, we're going to try and mitigate those as best we possibly can, show you how to achieve your objectives. And then meeting number four is just rubber meets the road. We have to implement that process, decide if this is a mutually beneficial relationship, and do we want to move forward. It's the paperwork phase, unfortunately.
And if you would just like a second opinion on your retirement portfolio, we invite you to take the Aptus Blueprint Challenge. That is a 15-minute phone call with Josh to get a second opinion on how your retirement is doing. In return, Josh will give you a $25 gift card to spend and support our local community. The number is 614-364-7300. It's 614-364-7300. So we invite you to take the Aptus Blueprint Challenge or to schedule an appointment with Josh to go through the Aptus Retirement Blueprint process. Again, the number is 614-364-7300, 614-364-7300. The website, if you'd like to check it out, is aptuswealth.com. When we come back, we are going to talk about Social Security coming up next.
We'll be back with more at the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Show with Josh Pick at 98.9 The Answer.
To create a successful retirement plan in today's economy, it takes a customized, solutions-based approach. At Aptus Wealth Management, founder Josh Pick calls it the Aptus Blueprint, and it's focused on managing risk instead of chasing returns. If you're working with another advisor or simply want a second opinion, put his team to work for you. To schedule a complimentary consultation to learn more about the Aptus Blueprint process, contact Josh at 614-364-7300 or visit aptuswealth.com. There is no cost or obligation, but space is limited. To start your plan, call 614-364-7300. Or visit aptuswealth.com.
Thanks for listening to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show with Josh Pick. To schedule your complimentary customized planning session, give Josh a call at 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300.
Welcome back to the Aptus Blueprint Radio Show with Josh Pick. I'm Diane Brennan. Josh, how has the recent economic landscape changed how people look at Social Security? I mean, we were always worried before that it was going to go away.
Yeah, I think everybody has been worried. I mean, it's one of the most common things that people bring up. You know, after they say, you know, should I save into my 401k? Should I do blah, blah, blah? They go through all the list of items. The one that always rises to the surface is, what about Social Security? Can I count on it? People have pretty definitive opinions on it, whether it's based in fact or not. But it's obviously a polarizing issue that has people fearful. You know, it's a big chunk. If you look nationwide, Social Security is at least 30% or a third of people's income in retirement, if you look kind of across the board. I would say, you know, that's across the country. I would say in Columbus, the people that I see by and large, it's even more significant than that in their retirement picture. So the concept or the thought of it being diminished, going away, being affected really in any capacity is terrifying. And what people are also concerned about is, will it keep, even if it is there, will it keep up with inflation? And historically speaking, it has. It's kept up with CPI. But what we're seeing a lot of now is the cost of health insurance is going up quicker than the cost of inflation. And that is not, the Medicare program is not escaping that fact. So the average person is getting a raise in their Social Security, and then they're seeing that raise effectively get gobbled up by the raise in cost of their Medicare. So they go, great, you know, the average person gets about $1,500 a month out of Social Security. And if the cost of living adjustment goes up by 1.3% is the estimate that it's going to go up by this year, that's about $20. Well, if Medicare goes up by $25, they actually get a reduction, a felt reduction in their Social Security. So I think people have a huge concern that, one, is it going to be there? And if it is it going to be able to not become eroded by the cost of my health insurance through Medicare? And I think those are very logical questions and concerns. Let's kind of eliminate one of them, or at least talk factually about what does Social Security look like moving forward. Social Security is funded by two things. One, it's funded by people who pay in. It's the largest, you know, if you think about a Ponzi scheme, I hate to say it this way, but that's effectively what it is. People pay in, and then their contributions going in are effectively sent right back out to the door to people collecting. And as long as there's enough people paying in to the people collecting, the system works just fine. It's not making any money. It's not growing a fund of sorts, but at least we're keeping up the pace. Well, we all know that baby boomers are retiring. We all know that the workforce underneath them as a percentage is dwindling. So here now you have this scenario where it used to be four or five people contributing for every one person collecting, and now it's quickly shifting down to 2-to-1, and people are even concerned that it'll be lower than that. So how do we compensate for that less money in, more money going out? There's a big fund, a trust fund, if you will. And that trust fund makes up the difference. Well, we know factually that that trust fund does feel the brunt of the withdrawals, or a significant portion of the withdrawals. And that trust fund is, in fact, going to run out of money in 2032. So in 2032, that goes away. I believe, and I'm going off the top of my head here, but about a quarter of the payments of Social Security are from that trust fund. So if there are no changes, we don't increase the amount that people pay into Social Security, we don't change the retirement date, we don't change the collection amounts, we don't change anything. We just leave Social Security the way that it is, and we don't address it. In 2032, people's Social Security payments will go down by 20 to 25%. Now, do I think that's going to happen? I do not. I think something needs to change. But we don't know what that change is going to look like. So if you're working, I can't really lend any sort of credibility to what they're going to do. I have some hypotheses, but I'm not sure. But knowing that, it does build a lot of fear. Well, in 2032, my Social Security could be changed significantly. And even if it's not, it might not keep up with inflation. So what does that mean for me as I plan for my retirement picture? Well, one, I have to make up for that inflation adjustment somewhere else, which means I have to create an income plan that not only matches what I'm missing today to meet the amount of income that I'm going to need, but also will compensate for the fact that I don't believe my Social Security is going to keep up with inflation, and that's a required income source. So you have to do some math there, and you have to change maybe the way you've viewed Social Security up to this point. And then secondly, do we do some sort of contingency planning? If in fact politicians can't get their ducks in a row, can't come up with a logical solution, and there is a detrimental effect to Social Security for people collecting, which again, I don't think is going to happen. But if that were to occur, do I have some sort of contingency plan in place, tertiary plan, something to compensate for that? And that's a big topic of conversation, Diane, and it's one that I think we have some very good solutions on. But you have to have the conversation, and you have to do the planning.
If you would like a second opinion on your retirement portfolio, we invite you to take the Aptus Blueprint Challenge. It is a 15-minute phone call with Josh to get a second opinion. In return, he'll give you a $25 gift card to spend and support our local community. The number to call is 614-364-7300, 614-364-7300. Josh, whether virtually or in person, kids are back in school. So let's go back to school, too, for some Retirement 101. We're going to call you Professor Pick. And we're going to ask you, what are some key concepts that people need to know when planning their retirement?
Well, one, just like anything else, come up with some sort of system and attack it in small bite-sized pieces. Because if you just try and solve it all at the same time, it can become incredibly overwhelming. So let's just come up with some logical questions. We answer the questions and then we figure out how to solve the problem at the end. Question number one, you got to pick a date that you want to retire. Does that mean that it's going to be the day that you actually retire? Probably not. Do people waffle back and forth on when this is? Absolutely. But we have to have some sort of date to do math. And you can call this, rather than your retirement, your date of financial independence if you want. But I'm going to retire when I'm 65, whatever that is. And why is that important? Well, if you retire when you're 62, we have to worry about health insurance. There's a lot of issues that we have to consider. But just pick a retirement date, not when I'm going to collect my Social Security, not when I'm going to go on Medicare. Just this is the ideal date when I'd like to retire. Secondly, just take inventory. What have I done up to this point to plan for retirement? How much do I have in my 401k? How much emergency fund do I have? Do I have life insurance, etc.? Take financial inventory of absolutely everything you have, including my house will be paid off at X date, or if you have a home. Just take an inventory of absolutely everything. Write it down. Everything's important. How much am I saving per month? Then assess how much you believe you're going to need in retirement. Easy way to do that, Diane, is I know there's a lot of stuff out in the media that says you're going to need 80% of what you have currently while you're working. Ignore all that stuff. Here's a great place to start. I don't care what your gross income is. I want you to pay attention to what you actually bring home every 2 weeks or bi-monthly or whatever it is. This is what you actually bring home. And then say, if I look at my savings account, is it growing, shrinking, or staying the same? Because that's how much you're saving beyond what you're actually just bringing home. So if that number is, I make $9 million a year, but I don't know how these taxes work, but I'm only getting $2,000 every 2 weeks. Well, then it's about four. I mean, I know that's there's 26 pays, but about $4,000 a month is what you need. You've been living on $4,000 a month. It seems to be working, or whatever that number is for you. Write that number down. And then the only change that could affect that number would be, is my healthcare cost going to cost a lot more? Or is my house going to be paid off, or some big expense is going to go away that's going to put less of a strain on that number per month? But come up with a number that you believe you're going to need to retire on. Then, this is the big one. What do you think inflation's going to be between now and the rest of your life? Which is a hard conversation to come up with an answer to. I can tell you it's been about 2.5% over the last 25 years or so. But if you include the crazy 80s back in there, that number grows pretty quickly. And everybody has a different opinion on that. I believe, you know, I'll hear people say, I believe that inflation isn't going to be much of an issue because we're going to keep interest rates incredibly low, and reason after reason. Or I think that we've borrowed ourselves to death and the cost of goods is going to skyrocket. And I think inflation is going to be 4 or 5%. You have to be comfortable with that number. Obviously, if you work with us, I'll give you my reasons and logics behind why I think one is more accurate than the other. But come up with your number. Then you start doing all the math. And the math is this: how much risk am I willing to take? And by risk, I mean volatility. I think people use the term risk and nobody really understands what that means. If you invest in the stock market over a long period of time, there is actually very little risk in a diversified portfolio over a long period of time. But there can be a tremendous amount of volatility. And volatility means how much bounce, swings, you know, for example, in 2008, many, many people for a period of time lost half of their money in their 401ks. Now they've made that back plus some if they stayed in. But are you the kind of person that can actually weather that storm, or did you panic? And if you panicked, well, then we have to, and that's fine, we have to tier back the risk. And that tiering back of risk is going to affect your overall return. And that return is going to drive how much we have to save over a period of time to get to the amount of money that we need in the financial independence phase or the retirement phase, because we're going to need a pot of money to draw from the rest of our lives. And that pot of money is going to grow by how much we save and the rate of return in which it grows. And that rate of return is driven large in part by the amount of volatility that you're willing to assume. So have a real talk with yourself and say, how much volatility can I really handle? And then it gets into, you know, all the math, filling up the gaps. How am I going to get there from here to there? And what are landmines that occur on the way? But that's a very, I don't want to say easy, it's a lot of work, but it's a good gauge or a good step-by-step process to at least get you to some semblance of a good answer. And then obviously there's a lot of gaps along the way that we have to fill, but that'll get you started for sure.
And we want to tell them to work with a good financial planner.
I think it's critical because, you know, we look at everything through our own lenses, and sometimes we're not very truthful with ourselves. I've never met anybody who didn't say, well, when the market goes up and down, well, they're usually polarized, but a lot of people will say, when the market goes down by 50%, I keep the blinders on. It doesn't bother me a bit. Chances are, my experience, they're lying to themselves. That's not actually what happens. It's not what they've done over history. So I think having somebody that can keep you honest with yourself, ask the right questions, and maybe fill in some gaps of knowledge that you don't currently have, and then constantly monitor, address, and reevaluate is incredibly important. And the studies and the facts prove it to be the case. People who work with a financial planner, statistically speaking, are far more likely to hit their goals than people who don't.
It keeps you accountable.
Keeps you accountable, and it hopefully fills in, like I said, the gaps in knowledge which you don't have.
And what are you, when finding a financial planner, what should people look for? What should people be asking?
Well, I think there's a lot of questions, but the easiest starting point is, are in fact you working with a fiduciary? And this is not to say that I believe that commission-based brokers are bad. However, in those confines, they do have the opportunity to not be great. They do have the opportunity to be acting in their own best interests and not yours. When you work with a fiduciary or an investment advisor, the rules of the game are such that you know that they're working in your best interest because there's just no way that they can do it another way, meaning they're compensated based upon their advice and not based upon a product that they sell. So one product paying more than the other just can't happen in the investment advisor space. And then two, do some research. Hop online. Look them up. See, how have they had any complaints? Have they had a flawless record? Ask them questions. How many clients do you have? Can I get some referrals of clients that I could speak with and see what it's like to work with you? These are all very basic things, but things that, believe it or not, Diane, are very rarely asked of me, and I think they should be. So if you're interviewing different people, I would recommend asking those questions.
We invite you to take the Aptus Blueprint Challenge. It's a second opinion on your portfolio. Just schedule a 15-minute call with Josh and you'll receive a $25 gift card to support our local community. The number is 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300. And this works best with portfolios of $250,000 and up. And it is a limit of one per household. More of the Aptus Blueprint Retirement Radio Show with Josh Pick when we come back.
Thanks for listening to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show with Josh Pick. To schedule your complimentary customized planning session, give Josh a call at 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300.
Welcome back to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show with Josh Pick. I'm Diane Brennan. Josh, billionaire investor Ray Dalio recently talked with MarketWatch and said the world is going to change in shocking ways in the next 5 years. What are some ways we can protect our nest eggs if things do change in shocking ways?
Well, first, let's talk about who Ray Dalio is. Ray Dalio is one of the who's who investors of the last 50 years. And what's interesting about the way that he invests is he's a math nerd. So he isn't, I think oftentimes the general public thinks of people who are investors as almost successful gamblers. At least that's what I hear when I talk to people. Where true rules-based systematic approach investing is very, very effective. And with the advent of computers, which Ray was one of the kind of first to the street with the utilization of computers/artificial intelligence to make decisions because they just work quicker mathematically than others or than people. He was one of the first people to start using that, and his performance has spoken for itself. And I tell you that because I think oftentimes when we talk about what's going on in the economy, we kind of think of people who say, well, you know, we're building this mountainous debt, and at some point we're going to have to pay that back, and it's going to have a negative impact on the economy, and what about the U.S. dollar being the reserve currency, and what if that's ever pulled? And you take people like that oftentimes and you kind of put them into the category of, oh, here we go again. He's going to tell me to put 1,000 pounds of sugar in my basement. It's all coming to an end, and buy guns and gold. And, you know, you almost address those people as kooks. But when somebody like Ray says it, you kind of got to take it for what it's worth. And the reality is, we are, as a country, building a mountainous level of debt. And that will ultimately stunt the ability for the U.S. to grow. And relative to the rest of the world, the United States has really, for the last, call it 7,500 years, has been in the driver's seat. And if we don't make some changes, it's very possible that we will not be in that driver's seat for the next 50 years. So you're looking at this empire that is now exhibiting some significant signs of decline. And if you want to, I think what he's saying is, if you want to have an effective retirement plan, or you want to be successful in the United States, you're going to have to look at things a little bit differently than maybe you have in the past. You're going to have to look towards hedging against inflation. You're going to have to look towards, what are some other avenues of income generation that will allow me to pay for a much longer than before retirement? Because if we rewind back 75 years ago, people weren't living to 85, 90 years old like they are today. So that introduces some new challenges. When you think about the prospect of the U.S. dollar potentially being not utilized as the worldwide reserve currency, that could dramatically and negatively affect the value of the U.S. dollar. So you have to have inflation hedges in place. I think what he's really saying is he's warning people. He's warning people that you cannot simply live paycheck to paycheck, not save any money, and not put some, you know, put some things into motion to protect yourself in the long run. And he even went further to say, you know, Americans in general look at the value of everything in U.S. dollars. But when you're in an environment like that, and then that environment changes, what is the government going to do to preserve its spending power, essentially? So let me explain. We have all of this debt, and then we have essentially a bunch of foreign investors buying up our debt. We know this. We hear this on the news all the time. And they do that because the value of the dollar is really strong. The dollar has always been viewed as stable. Well, if you live in a country where your dollar is not stable, and you are, which we can't even fathom, but if you lived in a country where you go, my dollar is not stable, I'm going to buy U.S. dollars just to add stability to my net worth, to add stability to my purchasing power. You get a lot of foreign investors, even when maybe the investment that they're purchasing isn't the best, i.e. treasuries paying 1%. But 1% on a stable currency is a heck of a lot better than 7% on something that's bouncing around by 20% a day. So we're getting a lot of foreign investment doing that. But if the value of the dollar no longer does that, it no longer is the most stable currency, you're not going to get that influx of foreign investment. And when that occurs, well, now we're going to have trouble paying back our debt. So what's the only lever that we have to pull to pay back our debt? We print more of our own money to pay back ourselves, effectively. Well, when we print money, printing money is essentially inherent inflation. If there's more dollars, then dollars are worth less than they were yesterday, which means what he's cautioning of is that you have to take a proactive approach to planning, to plan for longevity, plan for inflation, plan for a changing economy, or maybe not great times to come. And this isn't me trying to say that the world's coming to an end and it's going to be awful and we're heading to the next depression. But what it does mean is you have to plan for things maybe not being the same for the next 20 years as they've been for the last 20 years. It does mean that you need to plan for multiple sources of income, not just putting all of your money in your 401k and stocks and bonds. Maybe I need sources of income like what we had talked about earlier, maybe some rental properties, maybe annuity contracts with inflation riders. Maybe there's a whole host of things you might want to look at, but being focused in just one asset class is very dangerous. And not taking into account the potential for significant inflation is very dangerous. And that's what he's really warning. And again, to kind of circle back to the beginning, Diane, when somebody like Ray says that, you best listen.
If you have any questions or you'd like a second opinion on your retirement portfolio, we invite you to take the Aptus Blueprint Challenge. It's a 15-minute phone call with Josh to get a second opinion on how you're doing. In return, he'll also give you a $25 gift card to support our local community. The number is 614-364-7300. 614-364-7300. The website is aptuswealth.com. Josh, what are some of the things people overlook the most when they're planning their retirement?
Well, I think we just spent the last 6 minutes kind of nerding out on macroeconomic issues with the world. Let's talk about some things that we can make an impact on very easy that I think are overlooked often. And the two biggest ones that I encounter all the time are taxes and when to take your Social Security. And we'll cover what I think is probably the easier one first, and that's Social Security. Almost always, people will take their Social Security at two times, either as early as possible or when they retire. That's what I see in my office all the time. And the reason for it is, well, I might as well start collecting it when I retire. That makes sense because it's a retirement income source and I'm retiring. So I'm going to go, I turn in my 2 weeks notice that I'm retiring, and then I go right down to the Social Security office and file for Social Security. And while that's not a terrible idea, it may be flawed in its ideology. It may make more sense to file for Social Security later and live off other assets in the interim, because Social Security is an income source that you know exactly what it's going to go up by and you know exactly what the ratchets are as of today. The other one is, I'm going to take it early because I think it's going to be gone. That's usually the other reason that I hear. And I think you should at least do, whether you still elect to do those same things, you should at least understand the mechanics of the way Social Security works, the benefits to taking it early versus late, or late versus early, how it's taxed, and the impact that can have on your financial picture overall. And I don't think, Diane, that goes into the planning phase very often. I think many times it's, my Social Security is what it is, and I need to fill the gap with my investments, when in reality, they should be coordinated together. So that's a huge gap, and it's an easy fix. So highly recommend that everybody focuses a little bit more time on Social Security. If you don't know how to do it, obviously we're here. We'll do it for you. Secondly, and this I think is going to become more and more impactful, and I don't know anybody who disagrees with me here. I think if you look at the status of our country, nobody believes taxes are going to go down. I think they're really, really low right now, but I don't think that most would agree that they're going to stay that low for a long time. So taxes will become more of a significant issue and will have more of a bite out of your retirement income. Couple that with what we just talked about in the last segment with Ray Dalio and what will the impact of inflation be. Well, you definitely don't want to get whammed with inflation and higher tax rates. That's a double whammy that is very difficult to recover from. So planning for taxes. When am I going to take money from what sources? Should I do Roth IRA conversions? Should I exhaust one asset class before going to the other, or should I take a little bit from both? And what I mean by that is, I have an IRA, I have a Roth IRA, I have a 401k, I have money just at the bank. Many times people will arbitrarily decide where they're going to take that money from. And ironically, Diane, usually it's the smaller chunk. The theory is, well, I only have 20 grand in this one, so I'll use that up until it's gone. And then I'll move to this one, I'll use that up until it's gone. And then I'll work my way up to the big one. And then I'll live off that one for the rest of my life. That could be the most foolish tax plan and investment plan, realistically, depending upon how you're invested, that you could possibly do. So one that I very much see overlooked is, where should I take my money from? How is that going to affect my overall return and risk over time? But then also, how is it going to affect my taxes? So plan for your Social Security, at least incorporate it into the plan, and at least know the math involved and your options and that you have available to you. And then secondly, make sure you're doing tax planning and pulling your investment, your income from your investments in an appropriate order.
And I just want to let listeners know that you are partnered and you have access to tax planners as well. So people can come to you as more or less a one-stop shop.
Of course, we're a very heavy tax planning, retirement planning practice, but we also obviously incorporate in tax professionals, CPAs, you name it, estate planners, when necessary, to make sure that we can, one, you know, get the tax return completed, but also in many cases have somebody who can substantiate the decisions that we're making.
Well, and let's talk about how important it is to have the tax professional looped into your retirement plans, because that can really kibosh a lot of things if there's no conversation.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, it's been my experience when I speak with people that many times the financial planner or investment advisor that they're working with refuses to do any tax planning. And by that, I mean, they go, you know, my compliance personnel won't allow me to talk about taxes. I'm not comfortable talking about taxes, so I'm not going to do that. Go talk to your tax professional. And when they go over to the tax professional and say, what's the best way for me to invest to make sure it's tax efficient? The tax professional says, I don't do investments. And the client is left trying to figure out what the best plan is. Our office, we want to coordinate that all together. So while we definitely are more than capable of handling taxes on our own end, and I owned a tax practice for a number of years, we will always get that double verified through another tax professional, because they're the people that are actually going to do your tax return. So we want to make sure we're on the same page and make sure that we have a plan in place that we're both following for the long run.
If you would like to go through the Aptus Retirement Blueprint process with Josh, or if you'd like to take the Aptus Blueprint Challenge, which is a second opinion on your portfolio from Josh, just schedule a 15-minute call and you'll also get a $25 gift card to support our local community. The number to call is 614-364-7300, 614-364-7300. Now, this works best with portfolios of $250,000 and up. There is a limit of one per household. More of the Aptus Blueprint Retirement Radio Show with Josh Pick when we come back.
We'll be back with more at the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Show with Josh Pick at 98.9 The Answer.
To create a successful retirement plan in today's economy, it takes a customized, solutions-based approach. At Aptus Wealth Management, founder Josh Pick calls it the Aptus Blueprint, and it's focused on managing risk instead of chasing returns. If you're working with another advisor or simply want a second opinion, put his team to work for you. To schedule a complimentary consultation to learn more about the Aptus Blueprint process, contact Josh at 614-364-7300 or visit aptuswealth.com. There is no cost or obligation, but space is limited. To start your plan, call 614-364-7300 or visit aptuswealth.com.
Thanks for listening to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show with Josh Pick. To schedule your complimentary customized planning session, give Josh a call at 614-364-7300.
Welcome back to the Aptus Blueprint Radio Show with Josh Pick. I'm Diane Brennan. Josh, so taxes, something that people often overlook when planning their retirement. What are some things folks might already have in their budget, but they increase in retirement?
You know, there's a number of them. And the first one is very probably easy and obvious, and that is travel, at least in the beginning. I found that when people retire, they've always wanted to go certain places, and they're going to do it in the first 5 years of retirement, almost always. And that's obviously predicated on you being interested in travel, but I see travel budgets go far higher than they ever expected. So, you know, that's one you just should plan for, and you should set aside the money for a travel budget and not assume that you're going to be able to handle it out of your cash flow, because chances are you're going to travel more than you think you're going to. The other one, healthcare. And I know, I would honestly say, Diane, that people don't overlook this that much, because it's beaten into our heads constantly that the cost of healthcare is going to go up significantly. And the good news, Diane, is you can really limit your exposure in the healthcare arena through Medicare and Medicare supplements. But the one thing that can careen a little bit higher is the cost of prescription drugs. So it's something to kind of, it's individual per person, but that can be significantly higher. I've heard stats of, you know, it going up by 10, 12% in retirement, the cost of their prescriptions beyond what they thought they were going to be. The other one is utilities. And I know that this one really shocks people. I've had this conversation with a lot of folks. When they retire, they say, man, my utilities went way through the roof, which I guess it stands to reason when you're home versus at work all day. If you have the lights on all day, your electric bill is going to go up versus your lights not being on all day. I don't think this is one that really cripples people in retirement, but it is something that I hear often, is that the cost of my utilities went up. The one that I think can really sneak up on people, though, the most, or at least they think it's going to go one way and it never does, is downsizing or relocating. I hear this one a lot. We've got this big house. We're going to downsize because it'll be cheaper. And that doesn't always work out the way you think it's going to. And this is the reason why it doesn't work out. I'm sure everybody's going to be nodding on the other end of the radio right now. I have a house at $300,000. I'm going to downsize to a $200,000 house, but it'll be brand new and I won't have any of the maintenance costs. Okay, perfect. My $300,000 house is currently tax assessed probably at $200,000 because I've lived in the house a really long time. So I'm only actually paying taxes as if my house is worth $200,000. So when I shift, my property taxes aren't really going to go down that much. They're probably going to be relatively the same. Two, I move into a brand new house, and I want to buy cool stuff for it, like new drapes or window treatments, or I want to put, I'm going to get new this or new that, or I need a new piece of furniture that'll fit over there, and it starts becoming very expensive. Well, I have to move my stuff to get there. Well, that's expensive. It very quickly ends up becoming a lateral move. Now, does that mean that you shouldn't do it? I'm not suggesting that at all. I think that there are some benefits to moving to a newer house in the way of maintenance, et cetera. Totally agree with that. But very rarely when somebody comes in and they say they're downsizing, are they telling me that it's going to be a lateral move? They're usually saying I'm going to downsize, so I'm going to end up coming back to you with this check for $50,000 from the downsize. And it usually just doesn't work out that way. Sometimes, but rarely. So that's one that I don't think people really see coming. They see the downsizing coming, but they don't think that it's going to be a lateral move. They think it's going to be a profitable endeavor, and it doesn't always work out that way. The other one that fortunately we're pretty good in Columbus about this with a lot of the programs and Silver Sneakers and all these different programs, but fitness, health, memberships, belonging to different clubs, that usually spikes up a decent amount when you retire, and I think it should. I mean, take care of yourself, be healthy, do different things. That's all great for your overall health and longevity, but that does typically go up. Not by a drastic amount, but it goes up. Charitable giving is another one. People tend to become more involved in different endeavors, and as a result, they want to contribute to those endeavors, whether that's church or a foundation or charity. I've noticed that charitable giving actually increases when people retire and live on less than when they were in their working years. Not always, but quite often. So I could keep on going on and on, Diane, but I think that's probably enough things that people don't see coming that ends up hitting them when they retire.
Are there some things, though, that you find people dropping altogether?
Yeah, one that people tell me goes down really quickly, and I don't know if this is good or bad, but is the cost of clothing, particularly if you were in corporate America. If you're in that corporate America environment where you seem to have two sets of wardrobes, you have the when I get home wardrobe and then the when I go to work dress up wardrobe, you don't need the second one anymore. It's no longer there. And that stuff tends to be pretty expensive. So cost of clothing usually goes down. Sometimes, depending upon what your commute is, gas goes down. People that, have 40, 50 hour commutes to get to work, they're no longer making that commute, or they're at least, driving to those places during down times if they're going to, because they don't have to go at a certain time. Their fuel costs go down. So I would say clothing and fuel costs usually drop, and almost everything else that has to do with leisure, entertainment, fitness, having fun goes way up, which is the way it should be in retirement, but it's just something you need to plan for.
If you would like a second opinion on your retirement portfolio, we invite you to take the Aptus Blueprint Challenge. It's a 15-minute phone call with Josh to get a second opinion just on how you're doing. In return, Josh will give you a $25 gift card to spend in our local community. The phone number is 614-364-7300, 614-364-7300. The website is aptuswealth.com. So, Josh, this is always a tough thing to talk about, and I'm sure you often have conversations with people about estate planning. But is there such a thing or a time is a good time to have this discussion?
It's always better to do any sort of planning sooner rather than later. Does that mean you have to do estate planning, and getting around the estate tax exemption when you're 22 years old? Probably not. But if you're retired and you have a sizable estate or a sizable amount of assets in general, you should be doing some level of estate planning. And I think estate planning kind of gets this gigantic, terrifying, overwhelming process of expense, working with an attorney, et cetera. Estate planning is an all-encompassing word that could mean anything from I have a will to I have a really robust, crazy estate plan that involves trusts and grats and all these crazy words and acronyms. You should be doing some level of that when you have children. You should be doing some level of that when you're retired. But the sooner the better to at least investigate what are my options. And fortunately, now is a very, very good time in the quote-unquote estate planning world to do that planning. So if there's anything that's going to make you kind of nudge forward into taking that first step and working on it, know that now from a tax perspective has arguably, there's never been a better time to start looking into it. And if you're going to make changes, making them sooner rather than later. And what do I mean by that? Well, the federal state tax and gift tax exemption is at a historic high. I mean, you can basically give north of $23 million, which I know doesn't apply to a lot of folks, but $23 million before you hit the estate as a couple, before you hit that estate tax bill. And for those of you who have no idea what we're talking about, there are two ways that you have to pay taxes when you die. Way number one is in the form of income taxes, if in fact they apply on what you're leaving to your beneficiaries. The other is a gift or inheritance tax, and that hits you when you have over certain dollar amounts. And that dollar amount has never been higher. There have been times in history where you don't really need to be that exorbitantly wealthy to lose a very significant percentage of your estate to what's called gift tax or estate tax. So kind of putting the process in motion to start taking advantage of the way that rules are now today and effectively locking them in through trust work, et cetera, could make a lot of difference for you. It all depends, but you don't know unless you start doing the planning. The other thing is just making outright gifts to your kids are at really significant highs. You can give $15,000 a kid, grandchild, et cetera, and get it out of your estate, and there's no taxation to the person receiving it. So let me give an example. You and your wife have four kids who each have four kids. I know that's a lot of kids, but that's 16 grandkids and four kids plus spouses. That's 24 people. Now there's 24 people in your family and two people giving it to those 24 people. So that's 48 different contributions, essentially. That's a lot of $15,000 that you can get out of your estate at no taxation of the beneficiaries and no gift tax issues. So it's never been a better time to start looking into it. The worst time to look into it is when you're on death's door. That's very, very difficult to start moving stuff around when it's too late. And that's unfortunately when people start planning for things. You know, everybody wants life insurance when they found out they're going to die. Everybody wants to do estate planning when they found out they're going to die. Not the best time to do it emotionally and not the best time to do it financially. So start having these conversations sooner rather than later. And there are a lot of options that are available to you that are not that expensive. So don't think it's going to cost you, you know, $50,000 to do an estate plan. It just simply isn't, unless you have an estate that's gigantic, in which $50,000 may not sound like that much money, which it won't cost you $50,000 either way. But you can make a huge difference in the amount of assets that you retain, lowering the expenses of taxes at your death, and also potentially minimizing the impact of the cost of a long-term care facility if proper planning is done. So the cost to you and your family, at least. So do the planning sooner rather than later. And now is one of the best times to do not only estate planning, but to do planning for taxes in general, including Roth IRA contributions or Roth IRA conversions, etc. Take the first step, and hopefully the Aptus Blueprint Challenge is enough to push you over the edge to actually make that first call and make it an impactful, meaningful decision that will change the course of your financial life moving forward.
You know, one of the things I'm always interested is, you know, when you mentioned you can gift your children some money that's tax-free. Do your clients ever have questions about what is the best way to even let your kids know what you're leaving them or giving them money early? Does it set kind of a precedent that might cause some issues later?
Yeah, and this is one of those, I know I say this often, but it depends on your kids and it depends on your situation. There are plenty of people I know that make, for example, they make Roth IRA contributions on behalf of their children every year, effectively setting up their kids for a less of a retirement burden because they've been funding effectively some of their retirement on a tax-free basis via gifting, and that works tremendously well for them and their kids. But you know your kids better than I do. I can just give you many, many options because you might have a kid that you go, yeah, I'll put $6,000 or $5,500 into a Roth IRA for them, and they'll take it out within the first 3 days they realize it's there. Well, that's probably not the most effective gifting strategy for your scenario. So I think my role in this process, Diane, is giving you the options and having meaningful conversations and real conversations about, tell me about the financial situation of that particular child. Ultimately, the decision is yours, and I'm certainly not going to steer you in one direction or the other, but I can tell you the most effective way to accomplish what you're trying to achieve.
Perfect. Thanks to everyone so much for joining us for this week's edition of the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show with Josh Pick. To learn strategies to manage risk and to schedule your own personalized planning session, or to take the Aptus Blueprint Challenge, give Josh's office a call. The number is 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300. And the website is aptuswealth.com. Thanks so much for joining us. We will talk to you next week.
You've been listening to the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show with host Josh Pick. Josh helps guide his clients through retirement by managing risk instead of chasing returns. He calls it a blueprint, and you can get started at no cost or obligation. Give the team at Aptus Wealth a call today to schedule your consultation at 614-364-7300. That's 614-364-7300 or online at aptuswealth.com. That's aptuswealth.com. To learn strategies to manage risk in the new economy, join us again next weekend right here at 98.9 The Answer. Any comments regarding safe and secure investments and guaranteed income streams refer only to fixed insurance products. They do not refer in any way to securities or investment advisory products. Fixed insurance and annuity product guarantees are subject to the claims-paying ability of the issuing company.